Chapter 6. Kale the Servitor. Unfocused. Warrior Priest. The girl found it difficult to sleep, with no grasp of where day ended and night began. There was never a cessation of sound. The room forever rumbled, even if only faintly, with tremors from the distant engines. With darkness and sound, both constant, she whiled away the hours, sitting upon her bed, doing nothing, staring at nothing, hearing nothing except for the occasional voice pass her door. Blindness brought 100 perceptive difficulties, but foremost among them was boredom. Cyrene had been a prolific reader, and her job necessitated a fair amount of travel, seeing all of the public sights in the city. With her eyes ruined, both those paths were barred in any meaningful sense. In her darker moments, she wondered at destiny's cruel sense of humour. To be chosen by the Astartes, to dwell among the angels of the Emperor, to walk the hallways of their great iron warship, smelling the sweat and machine oil, but seeing nothing at all. Oh yes, hilarious. Her first hours aboard had been the hardest, but at least they'd been eventful. During a physical examination in a painfully cold chamber, with needles sticking into the wasted muscles of her legs and arms, Cyrene had listened to one of the angels explain about bleached retinal pigment and how malnutrition affected the organs and muscles. She tried to focus on the angel's words, but her mind wandered as she sought to embrace what had happened and where she now found herself. The last 2 months on the surface had not been kind to her. The wandering groups of bandits in the foothills around the city had no regard for the sacred shul robe or its traditions of respect.
"Our world has ended," one of them had laughed. "The old ways no longer matter."
Cyrene had never seen him, but when she slept, her mind conjured faces he might have worn. Cruel, mocking faces. During her medical examination, she couldn't stop shivering, no matter how she tensed her muscles to resist. The angel's solar sailing vessel was cold enough to make her teeth clatter together when she tried to shape words, and she wondered if her breath was misting as it left her lips.
"Do you understand?" the angel had asked.
"Yes," she lied. "Yes, I understand." And then, "Thank you, angel."
Soon, other humans came to assist her. They smelled of spicy incense and spoke in careful, serious voices. They walked for some time. It could have been 5 minutes or 30. Without her eyes, everything felt stretched and slow. The corridors sounded busy. Occasionally she'd hear the machine snarls of an angel's armor joints as the warrior walked past. Much more frequently, she heard the swish of robes.
"Who are you?"
she asked one as they traveled.
"Servants," one man replied.
"We serve the bearers of the word," said the other.
On they walked. Time passed, the seconds marked by footsteps, the minutes by voices passing by.
"This is your chamber,"
one of her guides said, and proceeded to walk her around the room, placing her shaking fingers on the bed, the walls, the door release controls. A patient tour of her new home, her new cell.
"Thank you,"
she said. The room was not large and only scarcely furnished. She was far from comfortable, but Cyrene wasn't worried about being left alone here. It would be a blessing of sorts.
"Be well,"
the two men said in unison.
"What are your names?" she asked.
The reply she received was the hiss thud of the automatic door sealing closed. Cyrene sat on the bed. It was a hard, thin mattress not far removed from a prisoner's cot, and commenced her long, sensory-deprived existence of doing absolutely nothing. The only break in her daily monotonies came from a servitor who was remarkably reluctant or unable to speak in any detail, bringing her 3 meals of gruel-like chemical paste a day.
"This is disgusting,"
she remarked once, summoning up a frail smile.
"Am I to assume it consists of many nutrients and other beneficial things?"
"Yes," was the dead-voiced reply.
"Do you eat it yourself?"
"Yes."
"I'm sorry to hear that."
Silence.
"You don't speak much?"
"No."
"What is your name?"
Cyrene tried at last. Silence.
"Who were you?"
she asked. Cyrene was inured to servitors. The Imperium had left behind the secrets of their construction 60 years before, and they were commonplace in Monarchia. Penance was the term used for the fate suffered by heretics and criminals. Either way, it amounted to the same. The sinner's mind was scrubbed of all vitality, and bionics were installed within the body to increase its strength or enhance its utility. Silence met her question. "Before you were made into this," she tried to make her smile more friendly, "who were you?"
"No."
"No, you don't recall, or no, you won't tell me?"
"No."
Cyrene sighed. "Fine, go then. See you tomorrow."
"Yes,"
it replied. Feet shuffled. The door hissed closed again. "I shall name you Kale," she said to the empty room. Zaphon had visited her twice since the first day, and Argyltal had come 3 times. Each meeting with a captain had played out much the same as the one preceding it, with stilted conversation and awkward silences. From what Cyrene gathered, the Legion's fleet was en route to a world they were supposed to conquer, but were denied the order to begin the assault. "Why?" she'd asked, glad to have even this uncomfortable company.
"Aurelian remains in seclusion," Argyltal had said.
"Aurelian?"
"A name for our Primarch, spoken by few outside the Legion. It is Colchisian, the language of our homeworld."
"It's strange," Cyrene confessed, "to have a nickname for a god." Argyltal fell silent for some time.
"A Primarch is not a god. Sometimes the sons of gods, despite the power they inherit, are demigods. And it is not a nickname, it is a term of kinship, used only among family. It translates loosely as the gold."
"You said he remains secluded."
"Yes, within his chambers on our flagship, Fidelitas Lex."
"Does he hide from you?" She heard the Astartes swallow.
"I'm not entirely comfortable with this line of discussion, Cyrene. Let us just say that he has much to contemplate. The God Emperor's judgment is a burden upon many souls. The Primarch suffers as we suffer."
Cyrene thought long and hard before what she said next. "Argyltal?"
"Yes, Cyrene."
"You do not sound upset. You don't sound as if you're suffering."
"Do I not?"
"No. You sound angry."
"I see."
"Are you angry at the Emperor for what he did to you?"
"I have to go," said Argyltal. "I'm summoned."
The Astartes rose to his feet. "I heard no summons," the young woman said. "I'm sorry if I offended you." Argyltal walked from the room without another word. It would be 4 days before she had company again. Argyltal regarded the headless body with momentary consternation. He hadn't meant to do that. Decapitated, the servitor toppled to its side and lay on the floor of the iron cage, shivering in fitful spasm. The captain ignored its lifeless twitching, instead focusing on the slack-mouthed head that had flown between the iron cage's bars and thudded against the wall of the practice chamber. It watched him now, its dead eyes trembling, its augmented maw open, tongueless, with a jawbone of bronze plating.
"Was that necessary?" Torgal asked.
The sergeant was stripped to the waist, his muscled torso a geography of swollen, layered muscles formed by the biological tectonics at work in his genetic code. The fused ribcage robbed him of much of his humanity, as did the lumpen physicality of his musculature. If there was anything that would be considered handsome in the laboratory-wrought physiques of the Astartes subspecies, it was lacking in Torgal. Scars decorated much of his dark flesh. Ritual brandings, tattooed Colchisian scripture, and the slitted valleys from carving blades that found their marks over the years. Argyltal lowered the practice gladius. The smeared redness along its length reflected the overhead lighting in wet flashes.
"I am unfocused," he said. "I noticed, sir. So did the training servitor." 2 weeks now. 2 weeks of sitting in orbit doing nothing. 2 weeks of Aurelian remaining in isolation. I was not made to deal with this, brother."
Argyltal hit the release pad, opening the training cage's hemispheres and stepping from its boundaries. With a grunt, he cast his bloodied sword to the ground. It skidded, rasping along the floor and coming to a rest by the dead slave. It was my turn next, Torgal muttered, looking down at the slain slave with its 6 bionic arms. Each one ended in a blade. None bore traces of blood. Argyltal wiped sweat from the back of his neck and tossed the towel onto a nearby bench. He was only half paying attention to the maintenance servitors dragging the slain slave away for incineration.
I spoke with Cyrene, he said, several days ago.
So I heard. I've been thinking of meeting with her myself.
You don't find her a calming influence?
She sees too much, said Argyltal.
How ironic.
I'm serious, the captain said. She asked if I was angry with the Emperor. How am I supposed to answer that?
Torgar's glance took in the rest of the 7th Company's practice chamber. The Battle Brothers training elsewhere knew well enough to give their leader a respectful space when his humours were unbalanced. Wooden staves clacked against each other. Fist-fighting spars played out to the sound of meaty thumps. Powered force cages muted the sounds of clashing blades within. He turned back to the captain.
You could answer it with the truth.
Argyltal shook his head.
The truth feels foul on the tongue. I won't speak it.
Others will speak it, brother.
Others? Like you?
Torgal shrugged a bare shoulder.
I'm not ashamed to be angry, Argyltal. We were wronged, and we've been walking the wrong path.
Argyltal stretched, working out the stiffness in his shoulder muscles. He took a moment to compose his reply.
Torgal was a loudmouth, and he knew whatever he said would be carried to the rest of the company, perhaps even across to the rest of the Serrated Sun.
There's more to this than whether the Emperor wronged us or not. We are a legion founded on faith, and we find ourselves faithless. Anger is natural, but it is no answer. I will wait for the Primarch to return to us, and I will hear his wisdom before I decide my path.
Torgal couldn't help but smile.
Listen to yourself. Are you sure you don't want to carry a Crozius? I'm sure Erebus would consider training you again. I've heard him express his regret to Zaphon more than once.
You are an insidious presence in my life, brother.
The captain's scowl darkened his otherwise handsome features. His eyes were the blue of Colchisian summer skies, and his face, unscarred like so many of his brethren, still showed echoes of the human he might have been.
That ship sailed a long time ago, the captain said. I made my choice, and the first chaplain made his.
But
enough, Torgal. Old wounds can still ache. Has there been word of the Primarch's return?
Torgal regarded Argyltal closely, as if seeking something hidden in his eyes.
Not that I'm aware of. Why do you ask?
You know why. You've not heard anything from the chaplain gatherings.
Torgal shook his head.
They're bound by oaths of secrecy that a few innocent questions won't break. Have you spoken with Zaphon?
Many times, and he reveals little. Erebus has the Primarch's ear and delivers Aurelian's words down to the warrior priests at their conclaves. Zaphon promises we'll be enlightened soon. The Primarch's seclusion will be a matter of weeks, not months.
Do you believe that? Torgal asked.
Argyltal laughed, the sound bitter and short.
Knowing what to believe is the greatest threat we face.
Cyrene was asleep the next time she received a worthwhile visitor. The sound of her door sliding open roused her to a layer of rest slightly above unconsciousness.
Go away, Kale, I'm not hungry.
She rolled over and covered her head with the ungenerous pillow. Evidently, the monkish, scarce comforts of the Legion's warriors extended to their servants as well.
Kale?
Asked a deep, resonant voice. Cyrene removed the pillow. Coppery saliva tingled under her tongue, and her heart beat a touch faster.
Hello?
She called.
Who is Kale?
The voice asked. Cyrene sat up, her blind eyes flicking left and right in futile instinct.
Kale is the servitor that brings me my meals.
You named your servitor?
It was the name of a meat vendor in the Tophet Plaza. He was lynched for selling dog meat instead of lamb and sentenced to penance for his deceit.
I see. Appropriate, then.
The stranger moved around the cell with a light whisper of robes. Cyrene could feel the change in the air. The newcomer was a hulking figure, imposing beyond her blindness.
Who are you?
She asked.
I thought you would recognize my voice.
It is Zaphon.
Oh, angels sound very similar to me. All of your voices are so low. Hello, chaplain.
Hello again, Shul Asha. She kept the wince from her face. Even the respectful term for her trade shamed her when spoken in an angel's voice.
Where is Argaltal?
Zaphon growled like a desert jackal at bay. It took a few seconds for Cyrene to realize it was a chuckle.
The captain is attending a gathering of Legion commanders.
Why are you not with him?
Because I am not a commander, and I had my own duties to attend to. A conclave of the Chaplain Brotherhood aboard the Inviolate Sanctity.
Argaltal told me of those.
Zaphon's smile infected his tone, rendering the words almost kindly.
Did he? And what did he tell you?
That the Primarch speaks to one named Erebus, and Erebus carries the Lord's words to the warrior priests.
True enough, Shul Asha. I was told your vision is still not showing signs of return. The adepts are considering augmetic replacements.
Replacing my eyes? She felt her skin crawl. I wish to wait, to see if they'll heal.
It is your choice. Augmetics of delicate organs are specialized and rare. If you wish to have them, there would be a wait of several weeks before they were ready for implantation.
The angel's clinical tone was curiously unnerving. He delivered his blunt, kindly sentences with all the care of a hammer to the head.
Why are they considering it? Cyrene asked.
Because Argaltal asked it of them. The apothecarian on board De Profundis has the resources necessary for human augmentation when it comes to valued mortal crew.
But I am of no value.
She didn't speak from self-pity, merely gave voice to her confusion.
I do not know how I could ever serve the Legion.
No?
Zaphon said nothing for several moments. Perhaps he looked around the featureless chamber. His voice was gentler when it returned.
Forgive my laxity in visiting you, Shul Asha. The last days have been difficult. Allow me to cast some light on your situation.
Am I a slave?
What? No.
Am I a servant?
The angel chuckled.
Let me finish.
Forgive me, chaplain.
Several other chapters encountered lost souls in Monarchia's graveyard. You were not the only Kurian to join the Legion when we left, but you were the only one taken in by the chapter of the Serrated Sun. You ask how you could serve us. I would argue that you already do. Argaltal is my brother, and I know the paths his thoughts take. He brought you as a reminder, a symbol of the past. You are the living memorial of our Legion's greatest failure.
The perfect city was no den of sin. She tried to keep the offense from her voice. Why do you always speak of it so?
A pause. The slow release of a deep breath.
The city itself was not the sin. It was what the city represented. I have told you what the God Emperor decreed that day. You have a keen mind, girl. Do not ask for answers you can shape yourself. Now, this desire to serve the Legion, tell me why it matters to you.
She'd not really considered it before. It seemed the only course to walk, given her presence here. Yet there was a deeper reason, a desire that pulled at her in the uncountable hours she sat in silence.
I owe my life to the Legion, she said, and I wish to serve because it feels right that I should. It would be fair.
Is that all?
She shook her head, with no idea if Zaphon was even looking at her.
No, I confess I am also lonely and very bored.
Zaphon chuckled again.
Then we will deal with that. Were you one of the faithful on Kur?
Cyrene hesitated and moistened dry lips with a nervous tongue.
I listened to the speakers of the word preaching in the plazas and the daily prayers echoing across the city. Nothing stirred my heart. I believed, and I knew the scriptures, but I did not...
care?
Cyrene nodded. Her throat gave a sticky click as she took a breath.
Yes,
she admitted. She couldn't help the twitch when Zaphon's hand rested heavy on her shoulder.
I'm sorry, the young woman said, for my lack of faith.
Don't be. You are right, Cyrene.
I... what?
You showed insight.
and the strength to doubt conventional belief. Over countless centuries, humanity has achieved great things in the name of faith. History teaches us this. Faith is the fuel for the soul's journey. Without belief in greater ideals, we are incomplete. The union of the spirit with the flesh is what raises us above beasts and inhumans. But misplaced worship, to bow down before an unworthy idol, this is a sin of the gravest ignorance. And that is a sin you've never been guilty of. Be proud of that, lady. Warmth flooded through her to earn the respect of an angel like this. Fervor filled her voice for the first time since the death of her city. How could anyone bow before an unworthy idol? Another pause, a hesitation, before sighing out the words. Perhaps they were deceived. Perhaps they saw divinity and believed it was worthy of worship purely because it was divine.
I don't understand.
Her eyebrows met in confusion above unseeing eyes.
There's nothing else to worship but the divine. There are no gods but the emperor.
She heard Zaphon take a breath. When the chaplain spoke again, his voice was softer still.
Are you so certain, Cyrene?